Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. On September 11, 2001, Shirley Brooks Jones was on her way home from a conference in Denmark when her flight was diverted to a small town in the Canadian province of Newfoundland. The pilot at first said the purpose was to address an equipment failure, but when they landed, Shirley and the rest of the passengers learned the truth of the terrorist attacks that day, and their shock and horror perhaps was not matched, but eased anyway by what they found when they disembarked. An entire town of 4,000 had opened their hearts and homes to make the unexpected visitors comfortable, or much more than comfortable in many ways. What followed is the topic of a special story. It's going to be highlighted on NBC Network Television during the closing ceremonies of the 2010 Winter Olympics on Sunday. We wanted to give you a preview today with Shirley in the studio. Shirley is a retired OSU administrator. Shirley, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also joining us from Lewisport, Newfoundland, is former three-term mayor Bill Hooper. You were mayor at the time. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. And from St. Louis, Dan West. Dan West, Dan, you're still president of West Trade International?
Yes, ma'am.
And he was a fellow passenger on Delta Flight 15 on September 11, 2001. Dan, I'm glad you could join us as well.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
It kind of gives us that real international, across state lines kind of a flair to the show, which is exactly what the whole story is about, is international borders, state lines. It didn't really matter on September 11th, 2001. Bill Hooper, you were mayor of Lewisport at the time. What did you know when Delta Flight 15 landed that day? What were you told?
Well, we were told from the international airport in Gander that we were going to have some passengers diverted to Lewisport, and we were expecting them to be here probably just for a few hours or probably overnight, but that just didn't happen. It was longer than that.
did they tell you how many passengers, how many flights?
No, we were told that there was going to be some passengers, and they asked us to get back to them and see what we could accommodate. We made arrangements for approximately 1,200 people, and we received 773 people into our town from the flights.
Wow, 6,773?
No, 700.
700, so into your town, right.
Into our town.
There were a total of about 6,000 passengers in 38 planes that landed at Gander International, though.
Yes, that's right, John. They were sent to nearby communities, and they were accommodated there.
So, Dan, when you landed, when you were told the truth, what was the reactions on the plane? What happened?
Well, there was just a sort of a gasp, and then everybody was quiet. It was very surreal. In fact, we spent a total of 28 hours on the plane before they let us off, and nobody was upset. We just sort of sat there, numbed, and slowly all the electronics on the plane failed. At first we could watch movies, and then something happened to that, and then something happened to all the movie channels. We couldn't use our cell phones because I've later found out that all cell phones were shut off in North America. So we were just sort of sat there in isolation wondering what had happened and what was going to happen to us.
I guess it sort of changes the image we all have of sitting on the tarmac and waiting and complaining about that, huh?
Oh, it sure does. Everybody was extremely calm. The kids played around, played under blankets. Nobody complained. We had our snack. We were headed towards Atlanta, and our snack before we got to Atlanta became our meal that night. I think it was a sandwich. And then the next day we had breakfast, and they apologized. They opened the door, and they gave us a can of soda, a candy bar, and a packaged potato chips. And they said, "We're sorry, but that's all we have."
And the kids screamed for joy.
Right.
Shirley, what did you think? What was going through your mind during that 28 hours?
Well, it was absolutely amazing because, as Dan said, everybody was really quiet. I mean, it was amazing. I give a lot of the credit to the captain, Captain Michael Sweeney, because he was an extremely calm person. His whole demeanor was calm. He monitored the BBC the whole time we were aboard the plane, so he was able to give us, you know, information as he received it, and that was quite helpful. But as Dan said, it was very, very quiet, and it was amazing to me that having 218 passengers, that everybody was quiet. I mean, everybody was respectful of each other's, feelings and everything. I, of course, when Captain Sweeney told us that the first plane had gone into the tower, I thought immediately back to the late 1940s when a plane had gone into the Empire State Building. And I thought, well, you know, but why would the borders be closed and the airspace under control of the military and all that sort of thing if just a plane went in by accident? Well, of course, as time went on and we learned the details, it was just I kind of felt like I was in some of Rod Serling's early Twilight Zone programs.
Which are really cool when you're watching them.
Cool,
but
yes, and there was a lot that we could see outside. I mean, I saw, I like to tell people, when I was a kid, I used to listen to Sergeant Preston of the Yukon, and I was madly in love with Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. Well, he was there, but he was in a patrol car this time, not on his trusty horse.
I'm sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Bill, you know, when the folks were waiting in the plane, they hadn't disembarked yet, you knew fully what had happened by then.
Oh, yes. Yes, we did. We were listening to, well, I guess we were glued to the TVs and the radios, and we certainly gathered the story. And when they came into town, we were prepared for not, as I said earlier, not for three nights, but just one night.
Mm-hmm. Were you prepared? Well, first of all, let me remind our listeners that we're talking about right now, September 11th, 2001, in the day that more than 6,000 passengers from a total of 38 planes and jets, I guess, landed at Gander International Airport in the Canadian province of Newfoundland. About 763 were taken to
Lewisport.
Bill Hooper, you just heard speak. He's was the mayor of Lewisport, three-term mayor of Lewisport at the time. And was sort of in charge, I guess, of the. It wasn't exactly a rescue effort. How do you describe it now when you look back on that?
Well, some of the passengers said to us that we must have had some training in tragic things like this. But no, we didn't. None of our committee had any training. But I think it. I think Shirley can vouch for this. I think everything went fine. We. The passengers, and we had, like I said, we had 773 people here. During the time that they were here, we had no complaints, and they were, I think, well satisfied with their visits.
Well, I heard the food was great.
Yeah, it was good. Different, I guess.
How did you decide what they needed?
Well, we had, we had people from all over the world, and some were around special diets, and they weren't due to their religious beliefs, they weren't supposed to eat this. But we accommodated them fine, and they, like I said before, they were, I guess, quite willing to put up with what we had, and we sort of treated them the best we could. It was not perfect. Some people had to sleep on floors, but we managed.
Dan West, what was your impressions of the efforts of the folks in Lewisport?
I guess I would kind of sum it up as to what happened to my wife Sylvia and I. We were out, having been 28 hours on the airplane, we wanted to get out and stretch and walk. And as we walked the town, people would stop and say, "Can we take you someplace? Do you need anything?" Well, my wife said, "If I could just have a clean pair of clothes, because we couldn't take any bags off the plane, mm-hmm. I'd feel a lot better." So we stopped by the United Church and asked this lady, "Where can we shop?" And she says, "It's too far away. Get in my car." Nothing like, "Do you want to?" And this was Stella White. So Stella took us to the store, and she says, "Now I'm taking you to my house to take a bath. Do you want to or not?" "No, you're not going to bathe in the gym. You're coming to my house to bathe. And as soon as you get through, I'm serving you tea. I'm taking a casserole to the United Church. I'm coming back, and I'm feeding you dinner. Then I'm taking you to command headquarters, and I'm checking you out. Because you're sleeping in my house."
Aww.
None of this was, "Do you want to or not?" It's, "Here's what's going to happen." And I laugh, and that was Stella and Gerald White. And they're dear, dear friends. We've stayed with them since. We've been back twice. We know all of their family, their children. In fact, their grandson just got in a scholarship this past year. We were able to award to him. So that's how the people were. And, you know, Lewisport, or actually Newfoundland and the Maritime Provinces, is one of the poorer provinces. And these people gave their all, and expecting nothing, absolutely nothing in return.
I don't know what it's like right now, Bill, but at the time, unemployment was at 17%.
Well, in Lewisport, in the town of Lewisport, we are fortunate, I guess, because our unemployment rate, I guess, is probably around 4 to 5%, and that's not the average for the province.
Okay. Shirley, you know, just before this program, I was interviewing the acclaimed Liberian poet Patricia Jabi Wesley, and she was talking about being a refugee and how the people who save you are like family. They become like family, and that made me think of this experience because this story isn't being told on NBC, you know, during the closing ceremonies of the 2010 Winter Olympics in Vancouver for just any old reason. There were lots of great stories out of, you know, that came out of the tragedy of 9/11, but it had to do with the bonding that went on during that, really, just a little over 3 days.
Absolutely. And as I talk with many, many of the former passengers, they use the very same word, bonding, and we did. We bonded very, very quickly. I'll give you one example. Bill's wife, Thelma, has become my dearest friend, and I laugh, and Bill's my boyfriend. I mean, I like to tell people I'm madly in love with Bill. Thelma doesn't care. But I first met Thelma when the bus pulled up in front of the Lions Club Center. And this one person was standing alone, and she seemed to be very shy. She smiled and spoke to each of us as we got off of the bus, and she said, "Please go in. There's food, there are things to drink, and you can get some rest. Please go in. If there's anything at all you need, please let us know." And we had that from everybody, and they meant it. We found out very quickly that they meant what they said. If you needed anything, let them know. So when we went inside the center, the first thing we spotted were the tables that were all set with white tablecloths, and it was all set up. They were all waiting for us. There were mats on the floor that had been brought in from the high school. There was food. You could smell the food, and you could smell the coffee and the tea and everything. And the first thing we noticed, though, was the television set. And one of the things that Bill did was he got on the radio, and he asked people to bring in whatever they could spare, and television sets was one of the things that they really needed because we'd seen no pictures at all. We spotted as we went in.
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Bill? Okay.
Okay.
We're going to have to check back with Bill, but
okay.
Yeah, you know what, Shirley? We're going to have to take a break right now, so why don't we fix that,
okay,
and we will come back. We're talking about the bonding that went on on September 11th, 2001, or after that, in the Canadian province of Newfoundland, when more than 6,000 people were forced to land there at the only airport that could take their planes. If you have a question or comment, give us a call when we get back at 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Tiger Woods has put sex addiction into headlines. Is it real? Can it be treated? We'll ask. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point will be here this afternoon at 1 o'clock, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 27 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20. Cloudy skies today, scattered snow showers, a high of 30 degrees. A chance of snow tonight and maybe an inch of accumulation, a low of 17. Cloudy skies for Friday and snow showers likely on Friday as well. Another inch or less of accumulation and a high of 28. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
As loved our Father, so we love. Where once they stood. God guard the Newfoundland. God guard thee, God guard thee, God guard the Newfoundland.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. That is the regional theme of Newfoundland. And it got Shirley all choked up. So it gets me all choked up, too. I'm like, blah. A nickname for Newfoundland is The Rock,
yes.
I guess. It felt like The Rock, didn't it, Shirley?
Oh, they were truly The Rock to us. I mean, they took such fine care of us. They respected our privacy, our dignity, and yet there they were. I wanted to tell you about my very, very deep and loving relationship with Bill's wife, Thelma. Once we got into the Lions Club Center and we saw all of the pictures on the television sets, we were all, you know, tears streaming down our faces.
You had no idea.
No, we
really
had no idea. And I'm going to digress just a second here, but several weeks after I got back from being in Newfoundland, I realized that all of the pictures that had formed in my head during the time that we sat on the airplane, all of those pictures that Captain Sweeney were telling us about what was happening, those pictures were in black and white. It wasn't until I actually saw those pictures in color on the tiny television set in the Lions Club Center in Lewisport, Newfoundland, that it became real. It really became real. And then, you know, that was it. But after a long period of standing there watching those pictures over and over and over, I was absolutely exhausted because I don't think many of us slept very much on the plane. We'd kind of doze every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time I got to looking around for a mat that I could stretch out on, everybody had seemed to taken up the spaces. So I thought, I have got to stretch out and take a nap. So I pulled three straight chairs together. And I stretched out on those three chairs, and I proceeded to go to sleep. And all of a sudden, it seemed like somebody was watching me. And I opened my eyes, and there sat the lady who had welcomed us. And she's sitting on a chair, and she says, "Oh, my, that don't look too comfortable." And I said, "Oh, I'm fine." And she said, "Well, it don't look too comfortable." And so she sat on that chair and watched me sleep. I think she was afraid I was going to fall off the chairs. But Thelma and I are just I have four brothers and four sisters. And so I call Thelma my fifth sister and Bill my fifth brother.
You know, Dan, I've never been in that kind of a situation before. Most people haven't. And I was just wondering, what does it feel like? Is it different, your relationship with the folks that you met there?
Yes, I think a very different relationship. You become instant friends. In fact, the people of Newfoundland have a saying, "We will take anybody in, and then we will decide if they're honest or not." That's just the way we are, which is a wonderful saying. And they took us in and accepted us. A fisherman took us out on the bay there for sightseeing because the weather was absolutely gorgeous. Not a cloud in the sky. But Stella's daughter, the lady that we stayed with, Christine Clipstone, said, "You're going to need some coats." So she went to her house and came out with 37 coats for all of us. These were men's coats, ladies' coats, kids' coats, overcoats, suit coats, every kind of coat you could imagine, and said, "Here, take and keep warm." And, you know, she didn't know if she would get all of her coats back or not or anything. So after this wonderful cruise on this beautiful bay, I'm walking down the street with, you imagine, 37 coats in front of me, trying to see over where I'm going, and this guy in a pickup truck stopped and said, "Can I help you? Can I take you someplace?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm going up two blocks up and then turn left, and the house with a basketball net is where I've got to take these coats back." And he said, "Oh, that's Miss Clipstone. That's our math teacher." So put the coats in the back of the truck, and we delivered them back again. And that's just how the people were. I mean, the doctors came and prescribed medicine for people that didn't have enough medicine with them. They put one.
And they wouldn't take any money for it.
No, none. They put one lady in the hospital because she was pregnant, and they didn't want anything. They didn't want an uh-oh any place.
So, mm-hmm.
And they asked nothing in return. That's just the way they are.
It's a pretty amazing story. If you're just joining us, my guests are Shirley Brooks Jones. She's a retired OSU administrator who was at a conference in Denmark, right, when she was along with about 200 other passengers on Delta Flight 15 was sidetracked on the day of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, along with Dan West of St. Louis. And Bill Hooper, former mayor of Lewisport, Newfoundland, was among those and probably led the charge, I imagine, to take care of and protect and make and comfort their temporary, I guess, refugees. It's an unusual experience to have these days, to be so dependent on other people, on strangers, on the kindness of strangers. Bill, it's not something that the folks in your town do very often because, you know.
No, that's correct. We don't do that too often, but we were happy to do that. We, like I said, we had those people here. We were only too glad to I guess, bring them into our community and make them feel part of our lives. Some people say, well, how do you do it? We're only a small community, and I guess being a small community, that's what made it work, because most people know each other, and we know their needs, so we all came together, and I should say we've done a pretty good job. And Dan Shirley could vouch for that.
Absolutely.
Well, and what makes this story, of course, why NBC is so interested in it and why everybody is so interested is partly, you know, of course, it was touching and everything that happened at the time, but it was what happened after Flight 15 took off again and continued on its way to Atlanta, that the story took a very sharp turn. And Shirley, why don't you tell us what happened on the flight to Atlanta?
We got back on the plane, and as Dan said earlier, the days that we spent there, absolutely gorgeous days. But the day that we were to take off, it was pouring cats and dogs. Everybody was crying. The men, I think, blamed it on the rain, but I think I know that it was, you know, real tears. But we got back on the plane, and we all we used the same boarding passes, by the way, that we had used on 9/11. So we sat in the same seats and everything. Once the plane got up to cruising altitude, we were allowed to get up and walk around, and some of us did. A lot of us had different experiences with different families and everything, but several of us were talking about what we could do, because it really bothered us, because we knew they couldn't really afford to do what they did for us, but yet they wouldn't take any money. And it really bothered us. And so we kept talking about what we could possibly do, what we could do without offending the dignity of those wonderful, wonderful people. One man said to me, I don't know how much you know about Newfoundland. And I said, well, I know a lot more now than what I did before. And he said, well, I'll tell you, the people in the other provinces don't much like the people in Newfoundland. And I was shocked. I said, and really, I was quite angry. And I said, why? And he said, because they're poor and they talk funny. And I thought, boy, now I come from Southeast
Ohio. Is that
Ohio.
You laughing back there, Bill?
I'm laughing.
Yes. I come from Vinton County. I know what poor and talking funny is. And, you know, I think maybe that's one of the reasons I was so comfortable in Newfoundland. I don't know. But anyway, this one man said, you know, I've thought and thought and thought about what we might do. And he said, I know that a lot of the students can't go on for a further education. I think maybe if we could help one student. And again, anyway, I was kind of upset. I said, one student, after all these people have done for us, we can't settle on one student. I said, why don't we set up an endowed scholarship fund so it'll go on forever and ever, and people will know, you know, for all time into the future, how much the people of Delta Flight 15 appreciated what the people of this area did for us on 9/11. And so I had to explain what an endowed scholarship one was, but then other people were joining us and saying, what can we do to help? And I said, here, make pledge sheets. So I'm ripping sheets of paper out of my notebook. And these fellows said, well, what goes on a pledge sheet? So I told them, you know, essentially what to do on a
pledge sheet. Address, phone number,
pledge. Right. Email, you know, whatever information and their pledge and so forth. So anyway, then the pledge sheets were going through and everything, but it was going slowly. So I asked one of the flight attendants if she would talk to the whole plane passengers to see whether they wanted to be a part of it, because I knew that everybody on that plane was very, very grateful and would want to be a part of it. And so the flight attendant said, oh, she thought it was a great idea, but she would have to ask the captain. And while I knew the captain would let us do it because of the way he had treated us.
It was technically against the rules.
It was technically against the rules, absolutely, but he let us do it. So since it was the one fellow's idea, I went back and I said, it's fine, but you have to speak to our fellow passengers. Oh, he turned ghostly white and said, oh, I can't do that. So anyway, I went up and was able to do that. I was a bit nervous about doing it. Because I was so afraid that I was going to become emotional.
Sure.
And then I didn't know how to get the passengers' attention. And I'm sitting on the jump seat with the little telephone, you know, in my hand and everything. And the flight attendant thought I was, you know, scared or something and didn't, you know, she said, well, let me pull the food cart in front of you so you don't have to see the passengers. So I said, no, that's not it. Now, I majored in English at Ohio State, and every English teacher that I had in my lifetime came into my head because I didn't have a way. I didn't have an introductory sentence. And
I know that feeling.
I was, you know, and I said, oh, I don't know how to start this. And she looked down at me and I looked up at her and she said, how about, and it was almost like it was slow motion. You know, I'm back in the Rod Serling segment. She says, how about, ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? I said, I literally put my hand up in the air and said, yeah, that's it. So when I got up after reading it, people, you know, the pledge sheets went through the plane very quickly. By the time we were ready to make our initial descent into Atlanta, several of the men went around, picked up the pledge sheets, and something over $15,000 U.S. had been pledged. Now, this is from people from all around the world, not merely just Americans.
Everyone on the plane, they weren't just Americans.
Yes,
right.
And including the captain and all of the crew, they made pledges as well. So that has continued. That's what I'm spending the major portion of my time speaking to various groups, and I know Dan does a lot of that. Dan and his wife Sylvia are faithful donors to the scholarship fund, which is called the Lewisport Area.
And we'll, of course, have links to all of that on our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. Dan, where's the scholarship fund at right now?
It's at the Columbus Fund.
The Columbus Foundation, but I mean the amount of it.
Oh, the amount? I think it's right around $1 million.
It's closing in on $1 million. Now, that includes some insurance policies and other things as well.
People have donated stock. They've donated insurance policies. They've donated money.
Absolutely.
We'll gladly accept anything that people will donate.
Bill, what has it done for your community?
Well, I think the iSchool took a old new approach with their grads. They look forward to it every graduation about scholarships, and I'm sure the kids do. We present scholarships between 12, 14, 15 students graduating from high school. The scholarships are not large, but like Shirley said, they will be going on for a long time, and it certainly gives the students something to work for at the end of the year.
College isn't quite as expensive in Canada as it is here. Isn't that right?
Yes. Yeah.
But this doesn't have to go to college. It can go to trade schools.
Okay.
Any kind of continued education.
Right. And any accredited college or university or post-high school vocational technical training program.
And all a student has to do is have an 85% or better grade point average, do a community project, be a good citizen, and write a short essay. And everybody that does that gets one. And it's become kind of a cause celeb for the for the high school students. They say, hey, get your grades up so you can be recognized, so you can get, as they call it, a plane scholarship.
That's right.
Yeah. Work a little bit harder, Joe, so you can get a plane scholarship and stand up on the podium with us all. So that's one of the important parts that comes out of this.
Bill, I bet you a lot of the kids that get the scholarships probably at this point, 9 years later, 9+ years later, can barely remember.
Well, a lot of students have moved down to universities and out of Canada and gone to different places like New Zealand and different parts of the world, and they've really proved themselves. I know the scholarships have something to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, they can't remember what happened on 9/11. They don't. They're getting
and that's one thing we have to do in our talk that Shirley did this year, is to explain to the students why they're getting this, because it was their parents and grandparents that did it, because they were, 8 or 9 years old when all this happened.
Yep.
And to date, as of June of 2009, we had presented 111 scholarships. And it's so neat. One girl from the very first class of 2002 is now in her second year of medical school. And I'm just so proud of all of those kids. They've just have done a beautiful job.
We're going to have to take a quick break right now. If you want to learn more about the scholarship, it's in the Columbus Foundation. You can go to our website at wosu.org/allsides. My guest, Shirley Brooks-Jones, a retired OSU administrator. Also, Dan West. Both of them were passengers on Delta Flight 15 on September 11, 2001. Both of them were sidetracked on that day for about 28 hours on the runway while they waited to find out what was going to happen. The Canadian province of Newfoundland took them in, and specifically in their case, the town of Lewisport. I keep wanting to say the town of Newfoundland. The town of Lewisport, also joining with us, is the former 3-term mayor of Lewisport, Bill Hooper. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
The next Fresh Air, a conversation with actor William Hurt about his work and his life.
You know, sometimes I'm an actor caught in a movie star's body.
He stars in the new film The Yellow Handkerchief as an ex-con in post-Katrina Louisiana. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to wosu.org/email to sign up for one of our e-newsletters. 27 degrees in downtown Columbus. Cloudy skies today with scattered snow showers, a high around 30. Cloudy tonight with a good chance of snow overnight, less than an inch of accumulation, a low of 17 degrees. Cloudy skies and snow showers on Friday, another inch or less of accumulation and a high of 28 for Friday.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I don't know what it is about a national anthem. It's pretty much any national anthem kind of gets to me. The Canadian national anthem we're playing in honor of Canada, and specifically the Canadian province of Newfoundland, that helped so many people out on September 11th, 2001, when they were stranded there after the terrorist attacks in the United States. this story is going to be highlighted by NBC during the closing ceremony during its production of the closing ceremonies on Sunday. Shirley, you went back. You've been back to Lewisport many times since then, but you went back for about 10 days to help NBC produce this segment. Tell us about what happened. And Dan, excuse me, Dan, did you go as well?
No, I did
not. Okay.
It was really neat because I've been back 17 times, and I keep telling people that if they want to keep me away, they're going to have a mighty big stick because I love going back. I go back each June for graduation and each September for 9/11 because that's where I just have to be there. I mean, that's where my heart is, you know. But I had a phone call late August from NBC Olympics researcher, and he wanted to know if I would be going to Newfoundland in September because they had decided that they wanted to do one major piece that would be shown during the Olympics. And this major piece would have nothing to do with sports, but everything with the heart of Canada. And as they did all of their research, they found about Newfoundland and particularly the Lewisport area. And so, yes, I was delighted to go back and to work with that crew from NBC Olympics. Wonderful, young, creative people. So much fun to work with. I mean, we worked ourselves silly. And I'm really...
How much could you work at it, didn't you?
Oh, I had the best
time.
I mean, the best time. And, you know, to be able to show them different places and introduce them to different people and everything. We just had a ball. We really did.
Bill, that had to be pretty exciting for the town, huh?
Yes, it was exciting times. And since 9/11, we've had many exciting times with Shirley and Dan and the crew.
I guess I'd like to talk about the heart of Newfoundland when my wife and I went back to give scholarships one time. We flew into St. John's, the capital, and then we struck out and stopped in the B&B, and their first question was, is this your first time to Newfoundland? And I said, no, we dropped in on 9/11 and explained what happened, and they said, your money's no good here. You stay free of charge.
That's right.
And we would go to another place, we'd get the same reaction. So we stayed all over Newfoundland and didn't spend a penny just because of the you know, the openness and the friendliness of the people. And I think, Bill, didn't some of the towns around help? I know Twillingate helped.
Oh, yes, so sure. The surrounding towns.
It was all the surrounding communities helped also.
I just want to comment on one thing there. Anne, in her opening remarks, said that we were one of the poorer provinces. Now you understand why.
Yeah, you spent all your money.
Well, you know, when you describe
free room and board.
That's right.
You know, when you describe something like that, you never know quite how to approach it because those kind of phrases mean different things in different people's minds. But I would suggest that if you measure a place by the number of friends it has from outside of it, then it's probably the richest country in the world or the richest province in the world.
That's true.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Are you going to do on Sunday night during the closing ceremonies when they make such a big stink about Lewisport, Bill?
Well, I'm going to be, like for the past 10 days I've been watching TV. I think I will certainly be watching it on that night to make sure that, and I will be taping it so that it's, see if everything is okay.
We have a few calls right now. I want to take them. If you'd like to call and talk with anybody, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can always email us at allsides@wosu.org. And, Bruno, you are on the air. You wanted to talk about the pronunciation of the province, and I asked my producers, like, what does he want to know? Am I saying
Well, here's the thing. And I don't know if you recall, about 10 or 15 years ago, WOSU had a half-hour program of CBC News, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, I guess.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And every time the province, the mayor's province, was involved in some report, CBC always pronounced it Newfoundland with the accent on found.
No.
And then a couple of years ago, I was on a group tour, and there was a couple from the mayor's province, and I asked them. And the husband said, well, it's Newfoundland. And the wife said, no, it's Newfoundland.
Yes.
And they sort of went back and forth. And I'm just wondering, how do the people, you know, in the mayor's province, do all of them pronounce it Newfoundland, Newfoundland, or what?
Well, You want me to comment on that?
Yes, Ann? Bill, please do. You're the expert.
When after 9/11, I had a call from Pennsylvania. Some of the reporters there wanted me to tape me and pronounce Newfoundland so that they could report it in their stories, the right pronunciation. And it's Newfoundland.
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 Okay.
Well,
that's
the way we pronounce Newfoundland.
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 Yeah. Newfoundland. Okay. I'm thinking about this in my mind. I'm sure I've been mispronouncing it then. Newfoundland.
Oh, you got, well, like you I said, CBC report is always pronounced as Newfoundland.
Which is how it's spelled.
Right.
That's true.
But it means new. It's apparently Newfoundland.
Yeah, Newfoundland.
Okay. Settled by people from Finland?
No.
Okay.
from England.
Don't want to make any assumptions. There was a question mark at the end of that.
It's like it's like we pronounce the city of NEWARK in Ohio. It's NERK.
Oh boy, don't get me started on the way Ohio pronounces names of cities.
Yes.
Bruno, thanks for your call. Is there anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Tim, you're on the air. You're related to Shirley.
Yes. Shirley's actually
Hi,
my aunt.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Aunt Shirley.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to share my thoughts a little bit, if that was okay.
Sure.
I remember the day, you know, distinctly, September 11th. I was actually about 125 miles from my house, and my wife called me and told me that the towers had been hit. I walked into a body shop. I'm an insurance adjuster, and I remember there was no noise at all. Everybody was watching the TV, and about the time I went in, you know, the second plane hit. Now, knowing that my aunt's in the air somewhere, I was, you know, very concerned. My wife's at home with my, you know, five-week-old daughter, and, you know, just all that going through my mind. And so, you know, I remember going outside, no planes in the air or anything else. And then finally we got a hold of, you know, Aunt Shirley, or she got a hold of us, and we found out where she was and everything. And, you know, through this unfortunate event, we've been able to make friends. And I guess I want to formally tell Bill thank you on the air for everything that he did for my aunt. You know, it was a terrifying time. And this thing is so much more widespread than just the few people on the plane now. I mean, it's affected people all over the world, basically, and you know, I just want to say how proud I am of, you know, my aunt and all the other passengers, and, you know, I guess Newfoundland, specifically Lewisport. I mean, I'm not sure if that would have happened, and the shoe was on the other foot, that at the time, you know, people maybe in the States would have been as willing to help as, you know, Bill and his town. So I just want to thank them and, you know, encourage people to, you know, look into this and, I guess, look at yourself and see what you can do for others, like my aunt has done, you know, and made this tragic situation into something, you know, beautiful and special for these kids being able to, you know, further their education.
Thank you for your call, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
You're
welcome.
Thanks for listening. Uh-huh. See, Dan, when you go out and about and talk about this to folks, what do you tell them? How do you make the connection with them?
Well, I just explain what happened and what happened to us, and I usually start my speech with, where were you on 9/11? Let me tell you where I was. I was, you know, 40,000 feet over Newfoundland, and we made a U-turn and went back, and having traveled to something like 110 countries, I had never been to Newfoundland, so I said, this is another place I can tick off my travel.
You've been a lot of places, too.
Never had I thought that this would happen. And so, you know, I talk to people about the friendliness. As you can tell from my accent, I'm from Texas. And this is how you would be treated in West Texas. It's people against the elements, not people against people. And that's the message I try to take to people.
There's also a very strong natural connection between Canadians and folks from the States as well. And there's that. I think that that's a big part of what the NBC production is going to be about, is that connection. Bill?
Yes. Newfoundland, I guess, many years ago, A lot of our people had to go to the U.S. for to seek employment. a lot of those Newfoundlanders work in Boston and in Boston area, and most of them were on high steel, working on high steel jobs. Through that relationship that we get there, we've gathered, I guess, still remains today. And I know I just can remember when Newfoundland joined Canada, but there was some debate whether we should join Canada or should we join the United States, because up until that time we were a colony of Britain, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we still have that I guess, relation with the United States. And due to a lot of our, like I said, a lot of our people went to find employment in the United States.
Canada has worked hard during these Olympics to make sure it recognizes the different parts of the country and not just what most people are familiar with. Do you feel that sense of inclusion this year or during these Olympics, Bill?
Yes. Probably, yes. Yeah?
Yeah. Do you know anybody who's been to them?
Oh yeah, there's I know several. Yeah, I know like one of our people from our town here sat right behind the Russian goalie last night at the hockey game.
Oh boy!
So we have several from our town attending the Olympics.
Primo seats. Yeah. When you think, Dan,
I can give another example of the type of people that live there.
Sure.
When we went back this year, we drove back to Newfoundland to give their scholarships, which we drove some like 8,000 miles, 1,500 on gravel roads, took five ferries. And when we were catching the ferry from Nova Scotia over, a guy had a camper pulled by a truck. His truck wouldn't start. And, you know, they're loading the ship. And so another Newfoundlander came over and said, "Here, I've got the same type hitch. I can hook onto the trailer and pull your trailer on. And my uncle over here has a dump truck. He will hook onto your pickup truck, and we'll pull you all onto the ferry, and then we'll pull you off the ferry on the other end so that you can get to the island, and then we can fix your truck." And they didn't know anybody, and these people came out of the, as we say in Texas, out of the woodwork and offered to help with expecting nothing in return.
Shirley was telling us about a song that was written about this by somebody in Lewisport, and I want to talk about that before we end the show. But first, I see that there's the Order of Newfoundland and Labrador. There's a medal. Shirley, can you tell me what this is? It's in a beautiful green case.
Well, Bill, do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Well, we had our Lions Club nominated Shirley for that award, and the award goes out to, I think, seven Newfoundlanders, but one international award is awarded each year. So we nominated her for the first year, and she wasn't successful, so we didn't let her stay there. We done it the second time, and she was fortunate enough to win that award. I went to St. John's, the capital of our province, and was with Shirley when she received the award. I think it's it's held in high esteem in our province, and I'm sure Shirley think the same thing. So, Shirley, if you want to comment on the function, you can.
Yeah, the award actually is for citizens of Newfoundland and Labrador who do things that really make a difference in the province. And, to have been selected to receive this honor was just absolutely wonderful. I'm the only American to have ever received this award. And it just is so touching because the medallion itself, I mean, it's so symbolic. It's in the shape of a stylized pitcher plant, which is Newfoundland's provincial flower. The stone that is in it is Labradorite, which is Newfoundland's a provincial mineral. And then there's coat of arms, which shows that the people from Newfoundland are primarily from Ireland and Scotland. It has the Queen's crown, the ribbon that is attached, the green for the forests, and the white for the ice and the snow, the blue for the water. Of course, Newfoundland is surrounded by the Atlantic Ocean, so the water and the sky and the gold for the people. And tell you, that's just, it's so meaningful. When I accepted that award, or I shouldn't say I accepted it, but when I was invested as a member of the Order of Newfoundland and Labrador, the date that they selected to do that was December the 7th, 2007. And that December the 7th is so very meaningful to Americans. Mm-hmm. And to me, for that to happen on that day was especially meaningful. It just tied, you know, our countries together even more.
That was, of course, the day that we entered World War II,
yes,
Pearl Harbor.
Yes, Pearl Harbor. Yeah. And when I accepted that award, I accepted it on behalf of the people of Newfoundland and particularly the Lewisport area. It's their award because they're the ones who really did the work.
Now, Shirley, we only have a few more minutes left. I wanted you to just spend a little bit of that time telling us about the song that you were mentioning during the break that we would have played if
if my brain had been working, I would have brought a copy of
But
the
recite
song.
A little bit of it to us. It was written by
Glenn Fudge, who is an English teacher at the high school in Lewisport, and it's called "It's Just the Way We Are." Glenn wrote this song a couple of days after we Plain People left Lewisport, and it starts out saying, "Tuesday, September 11, 2001, has Armageddon finally begun?" And then he talks about that they're watching television and seeing what's happening. And then he talks about all of us arriving in his small town and the things that were done. People couldn't speak the same language, but they played music and so forth. And people, that's an international language. The last verse says, "Twin towers come tumbling down, but no terrorists can ever get us down because right here in my small town." And then the chorus goes, "No matter who you are, from near or from afar, come on in. You've got a friend. It's just the way we are." And I could just kick myself for not bringing you a copy of that. I'll see that you get a copy of it. It's a wonderful song.
If there's a link anywhere, we'll get it on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Also a link to the Columbus Foundation and where you can go if you want to learn more about the Plain People's Fund for the students in Lewisport. In the province of
Newfoundland.
Newfoundland, you know, and I just was distracted there in my left ear. I apologize for messing it up. Thank you to my guests today, Shirley Brooks Jones, and also Dan West. They were both passengers on Delta Flight 15 on September 11th, 2001. Thank you so much, Shirley, for being with us.
Thank you so much, Ann.
And Dan, I appreciate it, all the way from St. Louis. Thank you very much.
Thank you for including me.
And also Bill Hooper. He's a 3-time mayor of
Lewisport, Newfoundland.
I want to keep saying Lewistown. Listeners apologize. Bill Hooper, thank you so much for being with us all the way from Lewisport, Newfoundland.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate it. Again, if you want to learn more about any of this, go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And thanks again for listening today to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.